March has arrived, and we are only weeks away from the big tournament. Yes, that tournament. Make sure to head to BetOnline and open an account today to get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest starting on March 15th. That's right, I said $100,000, and on March 15th. You don't need to be hardcore to get in on this action, and with multiple entries available, it's this season's best chance to cash in. Remember, the NBA and XFL are still going strong, so whatever your passion is, BetOnline is the place to be for all your betting needs. So visit our good friends and exclusive partner, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code BLUEWIRE, that's all one word, BLUEWIRE, for your 50% sign-up bonus. That's BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway, lays it in! Zach LaVine does it again!
Crossover, Love.
Get it up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I am Jason Pat here, as always, with Ricky O'Donnell. We also have a special guest today. We have Matt Bernhardt from Bloggable, the managing editor. We will welcome him in a bit. First, the Bulls are now 20-40, 20 games under 500 now. They've lost twice this week. They lost a heartbreaker to the Oklahoma City Thunder. They were getting their ass beat. They were down 23 in the first half. They made a huge comeback behind Zach LaVine and Kobe White. Kobe White continuing to play very well. Falled 124-122 after a desperate Zach LaVine heave was a bit off. Zach hit some ridiculous shots in the fourth quarter to keep the Bulls in it, but they ended up losing. And then they went and got they had 3 or 4 days off, and then they got their ass embarrassed by the Knicks on Saturday. 125-115, they got smoked in the paint. They gave up like 70-some points in the paint. Zach LaVine had some comments afterwards, just like the general frustration in the locker room evident after this game. Zach LaVine talking about them needing to change in the offseason. Just a very frustrated locker room. Not the Bulls are 20-40. They're like, I think they're 6.5 games out of the playoffs. There's really even no point in even mentioning that stuff anymore. Since they're again, 6.5 games behind the Brooklyn Nets at this point. The Magic have moved up to the 7th seed. They're 7 games behind the Magic. So basically, again, the Bulls lost season, more terrible stuff. It's the same old now with the Bulls.
Yeah, it is sort of nice that if the season ended right now, they would be the 7th pick once again. So we have ended on the perfect note. They accomplished that after losing to the Knicks. Matt, I was going back and reading the post that you wrote about Jim Boylan earlier this week. I think he gave these comments before the Thunder game where Correct. Boylan basically gave a self-assessment saying, hey, I'm not so bad. What you're seeing, what's happening behind closed doors is a lot better than that, what the outside public thinks it is. So, Matt, I thought that you just really hit the nail on the head on that post. And one thing you did was quote his statement at the beginning of the season when Boylan said, our goals for the season are to make the playoffs. There's no way we're going to stand up here and say, hey, I hope we can win 10 more games or I hope we can be better. We want to get to the mountaintop. Matt, is there anything more embarrassing than trying to be the 2020 Orlando Magic? Like, that's the mountaintop for the Bulls, and they can't even be true to themselves about how they've been able to assess their performance to this point.
Right, and I think even funnier than that is, like, he didn't even go for, like, the arbitrary improvement in games to say we were 10 games ever. He's saying we're not even winning more games, but our shot profile is good and I think our defense looks better and those kind of things. I mean, so when Boylan said that before the beginning of the season, and I think that was the last time I was on, I'm welcoming myself back in the season now that it's like toast. But I guess it's good to do like a kind of post-mortem already, like, because like as Jason said, the playoffs is officially like gone. That's not happening anymore. So going back to what Boylan said preseason, and it was kind of, that was actually like a point where we were actually like in favor of what Boylan was talking for once. It wasn't just like total nonsense. And he actually stepped up to a point where he was sitting next to Paxton and Foreman when he said that, and they kind of agreed with him, and they were kind of like forced to agree with him in that. I'm not sure Paxton and Foreman would have even brought up playoffs, but Boylan did, and they kind of said, like, yeah, okay, let's go with that. And now to totally backtrack on that, it's kind of just shameless. And it just kind of goes back to why I never liked the Boylan hire in the first place. And I know, like, a lot of it is try not to look too much at what he says and try to focus on what he does as a coach, and he's a crappy coach. So we can kind of move on back to what he's saying. And he's just like he's just a con man. And he like pumped his way up into this job, getting the extension. He managed to dupe Paxson and Michael Reinsdorf by being like this tough guy that they really thought Bulls basketball is supposed to be about. So he got the extension that way, and now he's just continuing with it. And now just trying through the media to say, like, you know, everything's fine. It's not my fault we're bad. It's the injuries, or it's player performance. Like, I'm designing this offense to get them good shots. They're just not hitting them. I've designed this crazy defensive scheme that actually did produce some results, but I think we all know it was kind of a mirage. And so he's just trying to pump himself back up to keep the job. And I think it might actually work.
Yeah, Boylan ended his statement by saying, quote, "Nobody in this organization said to me, you got to win this many games. Nobody said to me, hey, we're going to talk about wins and losses all year. Not one time have they said that to me." So I, you know, we'll talk about Boylan being a bullshitter, but I think he's telling the truth in that regard, because I don't think the Paxson actually wants to look at, you know, what the results of his decision have been. So that sort of segues into the rumors that the Bulls are going to add a GM over this offseason while still keeping around the same old clowns that have been here for the last, what, 15 or more years, with Gar Foreman, with John Paxson, with Jim Paxson, with Doug Collins. Matt, do you think that, like, this Boylan thing is going to be the first true test for a GM to see how much power he has? Because everything that we've heard is that the old guard, the guys who are currently running the franchise, are still totally behind Boylan. But you would think if they hire a GM who even has, like, 1% you know, belief in his own ability to do the job, you have to fire Boylan as the very first thing you do. The first day you take the job, you should be firing Boylan.
Right. I think that would be, like, yeah, that'd be like bare minimum to, like, a new, you know, if they want to say, like, this is a new voice, well, clearly it's going to be like, and it's an easy decision too, to just, like, fire this bozo, get someone else in, do an actual coaching search. You'll get some goodwill with the fans doing that. And that's, like, the bare minimum. And definitely, as you pointed out, Ricky, in your piece at SB Nation, like, that's totally not enough. Like, the fact that Paxson is even, like, involved at all in hiring the quote new voice in the organization is ridiculous. And the idea that the Reinsdorfs have this complete faith in Paxson, like, so if Hoiberg was Gar Foreman's guy because they, you know, they shared a real estate transaction and grew up together in Ames, well, I mean, Boylan is clearly John Paxson's guy. Every time in public, he's repeatedly doubled down on how he believes in Boylan's tactics and Boylan's attitude. And again, I think Boylan kind of conned Paxson in a way by Paxson's the one who started with this, like, spirit nonsense. And when he fired Hoiberg, and then Boylan just, like, lashed out into that, he says, like, okay, I'm going to do that. Like, I'm a true believer, John. Like, we're both, like, hardcore basketball guys, and we'll teach these young guys how to play the right way or whatever. And so, I mean, the idea that Boylan is, like, this abysmal failure, and to my opinion, even worse than Hoiberg, and that does not get, like, latched on to John Paxson, it's ridiculous to me. I mean, if Foreman's getting, like, forced out, more or less, or like forced away into like a scouting office, like deep in the basement of the Advocates Center. Well, I mean, so why doesn't Paxson get that same treatment for hiring Jim Boylan? And worse, he's going to hire the guy who's going to fire Boylan, and somehow that's not going to touch Paxson. It doesn't make any sense at all. And I think the fact that Paxson, like, hires somebody that fires Boylan, like, that will engender some goodwill. Don't get me wrong. And I'll be happy that Boylan's out of there. But I mean, the idea that they're just going to get a voice, but it won't be a well-paid voice, and it won't be much someone with much power, obviously, if Paxson and Collins and all these guys are still around, let alone potentially calling the shots.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And one thing we've mentioned before is, I mean, these guys have been around for so damn long. Ricky just said 15 years. I mean, Paxson has been there for, what, 17 years now, like, basically running. Like, he should not get to hire another coach, especially since, like you mentioned, Matt, that Boylan is, like, his guy. So have Boylan flame out spectacularly after all of this time that he's been around already. Like, it's just absolutely insane. Although Boylan, he said, one other thing he said, I think, at the end of these ridiculous comments he made was that he'd be surprised if he was fired. It's like, that you are, I mean, obviously, like you said, he's just trying to con his upper management,
yeah,
his bosses, into keeping him.
And right, like, and I think in this case, I think it may actually, like, turn against them. I think if a new guy does come in, I think part of it will be like, well, you know, the fans don't think you have power, but we're going to show them and give you the power to hire your own coach. So, I mean, it'll be like a bare minimum. It will it will be a good thing, but I think poor Boylan's going to get lopped off in this thing. But I mean, this is like his only opportunity, so he's gonna try to, you know, go down fighting.
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever gonna get, I mean, I said that about Vinny Del Negro too, but he got one, and Tim Floyd got another one, but I really don't think Jim Boylan's getting another head coaching job. It's just kind of crazy that they hired him in the first place. I mean, the history of like college coaches like him, and I know Boylan's been an NBA assistant since then, but Boylan wasn't even like a successful college coach. Like, at least Hoiberg was somewhat successful. John Beilein was like very successful. And like, they had the same trappings of dealing with NBA players. Boylan's having these problems, and he wasn't even like good as a college coach. So it's just wild that they're going to, I think they're going to get rid of him. But I mean, I guess we still have to be vigilant in like all of his quotes. It's kind of interesting that the broadcast partner, NBC Sports Chicago, is like no longer even tweeting out what Boylan says after games anymore, because it's like too embarrassing. And I think they're just trying to rely on the apathy of the fan base. And it works in some respects, because less people are paying attention, no doubt. I mean, I'm paying attention less for sure, and I'm like supposed to really care about this. Yeah. Hopefully Boylan can't just like skate on like injury excuses and like giving him like he's a, you know, a rookie head coach, so we're supposed to give him time. I mean, it was ridiculous to hire him. It was even more ridiculous to extend him, given the evidence that we had last year, and keeping him around after this year would just be negligence. And then like, I would hope that a new person in the front office would at least put a stop to it. And then, you know, worse, like, let's get like the league involved to try and like stop this from happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think in this case, maybe All-Star Weekend being in Chicago might help the Bulls in this regard, because just a light just shined on them. Just about how big of a joke they are. Obviously, like, we covered it at Bloggable Ton. Ricky, you wrote about it at the mothership, just how the Bulls were just a complete joke. And like, management was totally absent. Zach LaVine had the first take thing. Randall Carter Jr., I think, had that. There was that viral video of somebody like yelling "Fire Boylan," and he was just laughing. Ricky, when you asked Wendell Carter Jr. about Boylan, he laughed. Like, there's just so much out there where Boylan is just a complete laughing stock, and with All Star Weekend, like, just humiliation as well. Like, I think that should be enough to like push him out, at least. Again, like, the front office stuff, who knows what they actually do here. But before we actually just started this pod, Ricky thought that maybe that Boylan would stick around, because they're not going to change enough in the front office, and they're going to end up keeping him because Paxton's still that voice. Ricky, right now, would you say that you would think that Boylan is in or out next season?
He's got to get fired just on merit alone. Yeah. Like, he's been absolutely humiliating. It's something every week with this franchise, whether it's the timeout conversation, whether it's the idiotic quotes he's given before or after games. He finds a new way to embarrass himself every week. My question is, what does Paxton believe that Boylan actually does well? Like, for me, Paxton likes Boylan because he makes the work environment easier for Paxton, because he's on Paxton's side with everything. He's constantly kissing Paxton's ass. Whereas every other coach that Paxton's had has known that Paxton's full of shit. Boylan just keeps going with the company line because, at the end of the day, Boylan's probably well aware he's not going to get another opportunity being a head coach at the NBA level. So he just has to try to, you know, be the ultimate company man and riding it out. What I'm curious is Paxton so delusional that he actually believes that Boylan has made tangible strides with this group? Or is Paxton just like, well, you know, fuck me, we're a disaster. At least I can go into work every day and have a harmonious work environment with the guy who is directly under me, the guy I hired, just because Boylan kisses up all the time.
Yeah, and apparently Boylan's very open to feedback and said, oh, I talked to John after games. He mentions John, everyone by first name, John and Gar and Doug, whenever asked about how much support he has from the organization. Yeah, I think that's part of it, in that Paxton is like, well, I don't have the stones to actually coach, or like the will to actually do it. So let me get a guy who I can try and boss around, at least, and who's like amenable to my suggestions, which are from, you know, 1989. And I got Doug Collins here to reinforce me. And it's like, so there's the stories about all these stories that came out after the All-Star game about the new voice and that they're trying to hire, and Michael Reinsdorf's really, you know, glad handing and pounding the pavement, trying to find this new guy. But it's like, so part of the reason Gar Foreman's getting shuttled out, according to Joe Colley's reporting, like, the who's on the fire Gar Foreman beat, is like that, okay, so Doug Collins didn't like Fred Hoiberg as a coach and thought that, okay, that was Gar Foreman's guy. Clearly, Gar doesn't know what he's doing. But it's like, but if their response to that was to hire and extend Jim Boylan, what does that say about Doug Collins' ability to evaluate coaching? What does that say about John Paxson's ability to evaluate coaching? I mean, the idea that we're still trusting these guys as good at their jobs, just because they were like Doug Collins was good in the 90s and John Paxson had a good run with the Baby Bulls in 2003 and then lucked into Derrick Rose. I mean, like, that's what they're still holding on to. And I think, like, it's just a whole organization of people who will never work again. And so everyone's just trying to, like, hold on to this job because they know this is it. Like, Gar Forman's never going to work in the NBA again if he left the Bulls. John Paxson, I think, wouldn't want to work in the NBA again. And I think he has no ambition to run an NBA. Like, if he was offered a job with another team, I don't think he would take it. I don't think he cares to build a winning basketball team. I think he just wants to make Uncle Jerry happy and cash millions of dollars and work for the Reinsdorfs. I think if he was shown the door, he would never set foot in the NBA again. I don't think it doesn't matter to him. He doesn't care about winning basketball games. He just wants to be like a leader of the Chicago Bulls and work for Jerry Reinsdorf. That's like his grand ambition in life. So between him, Foreman, I mean, Collins wouldn't work in the NBA again, except maybe an advisor to some other like old person he befriended a while ago. I mean, and Boylan would never get another job again. All these guys are just like totally overpromoted and they're not, there's not credible anymore, and I think they're just desperately clinging to their own jobs. So these rumors about a new voice but are being hired by the old voices, I mean, the proof in that they're not going to hire anyone significant is in the rumors of the names and the price. So instead of like, so the rumored name would be Chad Buchanan, who's the assistant GM of the Indiana Pacers. So we're going to go after the number two guy at the number like 14 franchise in the number 27 market or whatever. Like that's the kind of guys they're looking at to like add to this staff. And I think adding voices to the staff is ultimately a good thing, but why aren't we, if they love the Indiana Pacers culture so much, why not go after Kevin Pritchard? Why don't we see crazy names out there? Why aren't they going after Masai Ujiri to say like, you know, lead the Chicago freaking Bulls? Like we're a top organization. We're like one of the glamour franchises in this league. We should be getting the top talent to actually run this thing. But they're setting their sights way lower, way more provincial. They don't care to be the Chicago Bulls. They want to be the Indiana Pacers. They're like, oh, they got a great culture and a low payroll, and guys seem to really think they try hard, and like that's what we want, and let's hire their number two guy. I mean, who worked at Portland for a while too and traded us Tyrus Thomas for LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, let's get that guy. I mean, maybe Chad Buchanan is a great, maybe he has the credentials, but it just seems like they're aiming low. So, I mean, if they're aiming low, they're probably going to, you know, they're probably going to get someone low, and then that'll be someone who not only has, you know, low authority around the league compared to, you know, like Pat Riley, but also is just not going to be able to usurp John Paxson. So they're just getting someone who will fit in under them and not rock the boat too much.
To me, this all comes back to Michael Reinsdorf being completely incompetent, because Jerry's so checked out at this point that I do think that Michael would have enough authority to make actual moves within the Bulls' front office structure, i.e., actually firing Paxson. I think that, you know, if anyone could get Paxson fired, it would be Michael Reinsdorf. But I have to say, everything I've seen out of Michael Reinsdorf's mouth at this point, and how he's carried himself since he's taken on this leadership position within the Bulls, that this guy's totally incompetent too. Like, you could be happy that Jerry Reinsdorf, you know, potentially is not really going to be the lead decision maker for the Bulls anymore, and it's nice to have someone else. But what has Michael Reinsdorf done or shown us that's going to lead us to believe that he's going to be any better? And with bad ownership, this is going to continue to be a franchise that just is not the world-class team that they should be.
Yeah, and I actually disagree, Ricky. I don't think he does have the authority to fire Paxson. I think he has no authority. I think he's a joke, and I think they just put him in like charge of the car wash and figure he can't screw it up. I mean, like, we've seen in the past how Jerry Reinsdorf treats his baseball team versus his basketball team. He thinks the basketball team's just an easy business, so even his son can run it, and he runs the business. And apparently, according to business expert like Joe Colley, who thinks like Michael Reinsdorf's doing great stuff behind the scenes, like on the business side, and he just needs to take the reins of the basketball side. He has no authority to take reins of the basketball side. He has to run everything by his dad if he had to fire John Paxson. I'm convinced of it. Until he actually like did it, I would be convinced that he can't. Because, I mean, what else do you need to know? And as you point out, Ricky, it would be, like, such an easy move for him to, like, take over and, like, show goodwill to the fans. Like, okay, yep. Like, so my dad's not in charge anymore. I'm in charge. And I'm not beholden to John Paxson. So let's fire him. It's an easy decision. Everyone will be happy. Even John Paxson will be happy because he doesn't want to do this anymore. So, Like, let's just get on with it and move on, and like move on to a new era. But instead, he's holding on, and I think he's holding on because he has to. I don't think he could fire Paxson. I'm not even sure he can handle firing Doug Collins. I think Paxson had Doug weep to Jerry and say like, "Oh, I want to come in and help and bring the Bulls back," and that, so that's why he's on board. It's like, it's ridiculous. I mean, and John Paxson's brother's there, and you know, Gar Forman's wife is friends with Michael Reinsdorf's wife, and it's all just like, I don't Cronies. Think there's any actual like authority that Michael Reinsdorf has. I think he just is the COO and he runs the business, and they let John Paxson, the, you know, the basketball, you know, mind master, figure out the basketball side. And I don't think he actually has the authority to touch John Paxson.
I just don't think he knows anything. Like, to me, he's in the best position to get John Paxson fired. Yeah. Like, if anyone could make the plea to his dad, it's him. But like, I've heard in conversations with people around the team over the last few years, like, he was going to Scottie Pippen for advice on basketball matters. Like, I just don't think that Michael Reinsdorf knows anything about basketball. And I think that Michael Reinsdorf is so clueless that he actually believes that Paxson is competent and has the team on the right track, which is, you know, where this all really falls apart.
Like, no, when we heard last year when Michael Reinsdorf had like these comments in the media, they were just like so clueless, and he was like self-owning himself constantly about how confused he was about everything. I'm confused. Why do you call him guard packs? They're not the same person.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm confused why people don't think John Paxson is doing a good job. He did a good job when he drafted Chris Duhon 15 years ago. I mean, this is like the way these guys, they're still holding on to this like post Krause era where John Paxson did a competent job. He didn't do like a fantastic job. I remember Reinsdorf like bizarrely used the term tripped for that team when that team like fell to get Derrick Rose in the lottery because they were terrible. And the Ben Wallace signing, when they said, oh, well, you know, he was the top free agent that year. Well, yeah, he was a disaster. And you should have people like running basketball operations who know like not to avoid those kind of mistakes. And, you know, obviously the mistakes in the past 5 years are they're trying to pass those off as minor, or before that they pin those on Gar Forman. But even like this grand era of John Paxson led basketball was not that great, and certainly not worth keeping around this long. I mean, the whole like what doesn't bother me is like, what does he like have? What's the problem with firing him? Like, why does he have to stay? He's not won a title. I mean, he's not like built all these winners. He's not, no one likes him. Like, the fans don't like him. So I don't understand why he has to be kept on board, except that Jerry Reinsdorf likes him, and like Jerry still likes to assert control, and that's what I still think he has ultimate control over this.
1993, baby, game six, hitting that shot against the Suns has bought him 10 years too long as running the Bulls.
To Ricky's point about Michael Reinsdorf not like knowing anyone around the league, I think that's really true, and it is kind of a tough situation to kind of put yourself in. Like, who would he go to talk to get John Paxson fired? You know, like, who is he going to try and, like, go around Paxson's back? Someone he's known, you know, for however long. And clearly they, you know, I think there's more of an authority figure of Paxson over Michael Reinsdorf, if anything. I bet that's more of the power dynamic. So I don't know who he's going to talk to. Like, is he going to, like, reach way back and go to, like, Rod Thorne or someone, or bring, like, Jerry Colangelo on board? Like,
oh God, no.
I know, like, in the NFL, don't they have, like, these sage guys who, like, help the owners find people to run the basketball team? But, I mean, it could be as easy as just, you know, find someone who's already good at it at a good franchise but not the Chicago freaking Bulls and say, hey, run the Bulls. We're going to give you a ton of money, and let's do it. But I know last week Brian Windhorst was on AM1000, and he said – he wouldn't give any names, but he said based on the people he did here, he wouldn't give specific names, but he said they were not high-priced people. They were all first-time general managers. So I think that's what they're looking for. They're looking for someone to work under Paxson or alongside Paxson, not someone to replace Paxson. And I think that's something difficult to like try to find someone to like run your whole basketball team when you don't know anyone around the league to do it. But, I mean, you kind of could just, you know, target someone and poach them.
Yeah, I don't know what they're gonna do. You mentioned like you go after your jury. Is there anybody you'd like to go after in terms of the front office or even as coach? Like I'm like bad at this stuff.
I mean, it's such a
crapshoot.
Like, I'm a fraud blog boy. I don't have any actual solutions. Yeah. I just complain. But I mean, so like you'll hear. I know David Kaplan's floated out Sam Presti. Sure, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Anyone who's had like sustained success and can work within the margins of a small market. I mean, just the. you would think that, oh, if you work with the Bulls, that'd be a big market, but I think the Bulls would still constrain any GM to like operate like a small market. So I guess it would be beneficial if that person has had success with financial constraints, because then they could like move forward with those same constraints. And maybe that's part of their philosophy with going after Chad Buchanan, who's worked in like Charlotte, Indiana, and Portland. Yep. But yeah, I mean, like, just get Mike Zarin from the Boston Celtics. I mean, he's always mentioned as a name. He's probably waiting around for that Celtics job. But, you know, the Bulls should be a good job. I think if, you know, the idea that no one would take the job, I think someone would take the job because it's, you know, there's only 30 out there and the Bulls are still like a solid franchise. So, I mean, you don't have to like totally cut costs. You might have to sell a draft pick or two, but you don't have to like keep a super low payroll. And I think, but I mean, if they're only looking for guys who are like going to be their first job as GM, then, you know, you're running a risk of like what you're going to get. And I think it just shows a lack of ambition, which that's what really gets to me, is like even if it works out, like obviously Tom Thibodeau was a first time head coach and it worked out great, but it was still like a lack of ambition to get someone who's good and like someone, you know, is like bankable, and then you have to actually like pay for. Otherwise, when you keep doing stuff like with coaching, you get someone like Jim Boylan, who's unproven, but he's not a Tibbs. He's going to be a bust as a head coach.
So I want to go back to the business genius, Mike Reinsdorf, because this guy's got the magic touch with business, that's for sure. At least that's what they're telling us. However, the Bulls are now 11th in attendance, in capacity attendance. They're 24th in percentage of capacity attendance. So this is a disaster, Matt. This is a problem they haven't had before, since they've been owning the franchise. Like, every year the Bulls are top one, top two in attendance. So I'm curious, like, what do you think that the attendance is an actual issue for the Reinsdorf? Do you think that this is actually hurting their bottom line, and that perhaps this is motivating the search for a new GM? Or do you think that it's almost coming from Paxson, who wants a new GM just so that he doesn't have to talk to the media? Because that's my theory on this, is that I think Paxson totally embraces the fact that, oh yeah, we're going to hire a new GM. That idea might even be coming from Paxson, mostly so he doesn't have to talk to reporters, he doesn't have to go on The Score during Christmas, he doesn't have to be the public face of the organization, because at this point everyone fucking hates him, everyone in the media calls him out for his bullshit constantly, and people are referring to him by name when they're talking about, you know, the deep-seated problems with the franchise, which, you know, wasn't always the case when we started beating the drum on Fire Garpax. Now it's really more of an accepted mainstream idea.
Yeah, I think Gar Foreman was a bit of a shield for him for a while when he wanted to retire the first time, and he got promoted instead. And I think it just, like, in the time since then, in these media interviews, I mean, not only does he indicate that he hates doing like anything fan-facing through the media, it's clear that he hates like the modern NBA. He just complains about the salaries, and he complains about dealing with agents, and he complains about last year was the buyout market. He didn't like that. And it's just like, and all this, I think his general attitude around like scouting and development too, I don't think he doesn't like the AAU system. He calls all these draft prospects kids, and how they have to be, they don't like know as much when they come into the league. And that's really difficult for him as the freaking vice president of basketball operations to build a basketball team with all these kids. So I think I think you're right. I think part of it is that he doesn't want to do the job anymore. It's just bizarre to me that as a kind of admitting that to ownership, instead of, you know, being, you know, saying, okay, well, if you don't want the job anymore, like, don't take it. They're like, oh, good, we'll get someone to work under you, but you can still stay on board. I mean, the guy clearly doesn't want to do it anymore. He hates it. He doesn't like how the NBA is going. So just get, you know, kind of just like let him go. So, yeah, I think part of it might be like Paxson saying, you know, obviously I can't use Gar anymore as a shield, so let's get someone else to kind of like deflect for me. The attendance, now, I think that is something worthwhile to pay attention to, because I think they were feeling it last year a bit. It wasn't like reflected in the numbers, but it was clearly an issue with season ticket holders canceling, and we had those stories come out where Michael Reisdorf was reaching out to people, Jim Boylan was getting people lunch and inviting them to practice, and they were getting some renewals that way. But now it's, you know, it kind of carried over into this year to now where, you know, a lot of those people did cancel, and then a lot of the walk-ups are gone. And I mean, I'm doing my part. I haven't gone this year. No, it's not like a protest or anything. I really just haven't gone because they suck and I don't want to watch them. But I mean, I think that's the attitude around a lot of the city. And like, it's not just the attendance. It's like they're not on TVs and bars ever. Like, there's no buzz about them at all because they have they're no good and they have no real star. And it's just – so I think that is a problem because they're trying to sell – you know, they're going to do okay in attendance regardless, selling the corporate suites and the packages that way. But, I mean, clearly there's been a slide, and I think they need that backfill of like, more casual fans to actually buy these tickets and stay interested in the team.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing we were just talking about here is kind of how John Paxson might hate the modern NBA, and part of that is, like, the load management, resting guys. And something I think we've seen this season, in terms of, I think Boylan plays into this as well, is the mindset when it comes to injuries and like playing through it. We just saw it again with Coby White this week. He suffered a back injury before a practice, sat out of practice, and then Boylan, who apparently was like not supposed to talk about injuries anymore, but he kind of was talking about injuries recently because there have been a million of them, basically said something he's like, well, he can fight through this. This is something we also heard about Chandler Hutchinson, and his shoulder injury has never gotten better. He's out again now. I don't even know if he's going to be back this season. I don't think they've given an update on that. We kind of saw with Lowry at the beginning of the season as well, where he was this whole, like, I want to play 82 games, and he was kind of fighting through some weird, like, they were super weird about those injuries, and then finally they decided to sit him down, and who knows if he even comes back this season with this hip injury, which apparently he could play through if it was the playoffs, but if he kept playing, it would end up being, like, a stress fracture. I don't know, But there have been weird stuff with the injuries and the whole mindset of like, well, you can just like tough it out and play through it, which is kind of like an old school mindset where like rub some dirt on it. You can play through it. If you can walk, you can play through it or stuff like that. We're obviously in the modern NBA, like with load management, over long seasons, be more careful with guys. I feel like that's definitely been a huge issue. Matt, have you seen that issue? Do you have a problem with that? Do you think that's a problem with like John Paxson and Jim Boylan's mindset?
Yeah, and I think that's another way that they're aligned. And I think like we're talking about how Jim Boylan is very much John Paxson's coach, and I think the attitude towards injuries is part of it. And I'm not even sure it is like, you know, the training staff, and they've had multiple overhauls of the training staff, and these injuries are still happening. I'm not sure it's something like technically wrong with the training staff. It might be. I think it's more like a general mindset, and it starts from the top. So I think when you see John Paxson talk about how his disdain for load management and just that whole attitude of playing through injuries instead of avoiding them, when you are hurt, just don't play. And Jim Boylan taking that, and of course he's going to do anything that John Paxson says. So of course he's saying, okay, boss, like that's how you want it. That's how I like it too. I did rivets in Grand Rapids or whatever the fuck his like backstory is about him being a hard scrabble guy. So he pushes it onto his players. And like Chandler Hutchinson said it before, or when he came back after the All-Star break, he said, well, I was hurt, but we wanted to push it through to before the All-Star break to see if it would like, see if I could play through it. And then I'm hurt and I have to sit out after the All-Star break. It's like, I mean, it's one thing, especially if they were like actually fighting for the playoffs right, or anything, but I mean, in another lost season, it really makes no sense. And even in training camp, they were talking about, you know, guys wanting to play all 82 games. And like, and then not only that like declaration, but the admiration for it from management, from coaching, and even from like the beat writers and stuff, like, oh, it's really admirable that these guys want to play all 82 games. And then like maybe on its face, yes, but like smarter teams out there are not saying stuff like that. It's kind of like when Jimmy Butler said, like, I had a bet with my trainer to like play all 82 games. Like, what are we even doing here? Like, let's be like a little bit smarter about this. And I think especially in a lost season like this, and I think that was kind of partly what happened with Markkanen, is that and it's kind of a bizarre for them to say, like, well, if it was the playoffs, he would play. Right, but now yeah. that we're not, like, now that we're not like in that kind of like high pressure environment, he doesn't have to play. But it's like still kind of calling him out, like they did with Luol Deng all those years ago about active rest. And I think they just still have like this backwards attitude. And we saw it last year when they referenced, okay, the injuries are because they're not spending enough time training in the building and they're going off and doing their own thing. Yet another part of the modern NBA that John Paxson doesn't like, and that's players like training by themselves away from the watch of the team. I mean, it's just backwards. And they're just like, they're not keeping up with the times. And like Paxson got a guy in Boylan who will just like, you know, kind of manifest it on the court to where guys like Coby White are thinking, well, I got to play through this bad back. And I know Wendell Carter came back from his ankle injury just last night, and then afterwards said, well, you know, it was sore, and I had to just play through it. And And it's like, no, you really don't have to just play through it. We could be smarter about this and like take more time off if you're 100% healthy. I know part of it is like, yes, you want to try to, there's a difference between being hurt and being injured, and playing through like aches and pains is part of the NBA. It's 82 games. You're going to like screw up your legs during the way. But I think just like in general, this whole attitude, and this, again, it starts from the top. It starts with John Paxson, like a self-professed hardscrabble guy to Jim Boylan, and like trying to push this onto the players, that it's one thing to be backwards, and then it's another to be like so prideful about it. It's like they're so happy about being like, I know the rest of the league does it this way, but we're the Chicago Bulls and we do it this way. And then everyone gets hurt, and then, well, we can't evaluate our guys.
Matt, I know that John Paxson, who's a total coward, can't evaluate his own young core because they haven't been on the court enough together. Well, we are able to evaluate the young core because we have some eyes and some ears and can make decisions for ourselves and aren't scared to put it all out there. So, Matt, I'm interested in your evaluation of the young core. Of course, Coby White has had some really good games lately, 3 30-point games in a row, dropped 22 in the loss to the Knicks. So he's potentially looking solid. At least I think that it's encouragement for his development to have some big games, even amid a generally rough rookie year. I think Levine's a pretty good player in a bad role. He's obviously talented. He's put up big numbers. I think, the book on him is out there, but he's definitely not a terrible player. And then, coming into next year, you're going to have a make-or-break season for Lauri Markkanen. He's definitely going to have a ton of pressure on him. You're going to have Wendell Carter in year three. He's been very good defensively when he has been on the court. So I'm just curious of your evaluation of the young core, Matt. Would you, want to see these guys kept together? Do you think start flipping some of these pieces for assets? What do you think of this young core right now?
I'm kind of copping out a bit because I do think it is tough to evaluate. I think the fact that they're not all together makes it tough, but I mean, part of that is, if you're not available, we got to basically go off what we do see. And I think they're guys who are potentially good, but nothing special and nothing worth like having to keep on. And I think it would be tough to like say, okay, flip them, because what are you going to flip them for? Veterans? Are you going to flip them for draft picks? And that's kind of like based on the whole like direction of the franchise. Like, are we going to go back into another rebuild? Are we going to try to like absorb some contracts and get more assets and draft picks? But I mean, individually as players, I mean, it's just, it is not only tough to look at these guys and think they're doing well in these lost seasons, but also having Jim Boylan as coach. It's like, it was just such a monumental screw up to have a young team and you do get some veterans around them, but then you saddle them with this rookie coach who clearly doesn't know what he's doing, and it kind of like throws everything up. So, I mean, we looked at last February and we saw, they had this like 500 February, which was great shakes because they made half their threes and Otto Porter was like shooting out of his mind and they won half their games. And that was like this great momentum swing and going into the season. And we're seeing it again a little bit here, except without the wins. But you do see some like small, like individual victories, like Coby White's scoring outbursts. But I mean, this is like NBA February. This means nothing. And like bad teams all the time go on runs. I mean, the Phoenix Suns do it every year where they have like a good 10 game stretch, and they don't. Well, maybe they do because they're a bad franchise too. But I mean, you shouldn't use that to like make that your evaluation. So I think part of it is like, okay, yeah, you say you can't evaluate, but then stick to it and say like, okay, we can't evaluate, and we also can't evaluate that these guys are good either. So I don't think there's been no determination that Lauri Markkanen is that good, that Coby White's that good, that Wendell Carter is that good. They just haven't proven it, not only for long enough, but in like the important parts of the season where like all the teams are trying and intact. I mean, if we see it in February, I mean, like, it doesn't really matter. And like seeing like John Paxson say, we're going to use the last 20 games of the season when Otto Porter gets back to like really get a look at these guys. I mean, that's like, that's junk time. It's basically extended garbage time. And I think, I'm not even sure it's going to happen because they're going to realize they're out of it. And then they're going to basically tank and keep guys out then. So, I mean, so what is he going to say then? I guess we just had a whole nother season where we don't know what we have in Lauri Markkanen. I think you're right, Rick. Like, we can, like, they should be able to evaluate, and we can evaluate. And I think, honestly, the evaluation is that they haven't proven that they're that good, right? So, I mean, so why not? There's nothing like where you have to, like, where you're beholden to keep these guys as, like, parts of the core. I have no, like, allegiance to keeping the Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, Coby White core together. If you can get something of value for them now, I mean, again, it kind of depends on what you want to do as a franchise. If you want to like move your window to get younger players and draft picks, or if you want to try to get someone more established, I'm not against trying to consolidate to get like a maybe a undervalued star. I think that would take an actual good GM to to kind of find that star who's undervalued, basically find another Jimmy Butler and like who's unhappy. Now, of course, in Jimmy's case, he was actually perfectly happy here and they traded him anyway. But I mean, someone who they could say, you know, this person will give up a few of our quote unquote assets, our core, and they actually get a star in here to kind of build around that person. Because I think part of the problem, it's the coaching not being evaluated, but also no one able to dominate the ball who will get guys in good shots. And I think Zach LaVine does like a passable job at it, but he's just not the playmaker enough to really move the team. Thomas Satoransky is a decent veteran, but he's more of like a caretaker. So you really had no one to like kind of organize everybody and take on like the serious scoring load while also doing some playmaking. I think Zach LaVine is proven himself as a shot maker, but I mean, honestly, you'd think with that they would have managed to beat a single team in the East playoff picture this whole year. I mean, it's kind of a, I mean, going back to just circle back to Boylan for a bit about his like lack of disappointment in the season and like how he sees encouragement and wants to push out negativity and how, you know, they lose to New York and the players are upset. They should be more upset they haven't gotten a single like good win this whole season. It's the NBA. It should happen like by accident. And especially with Zach LaVine like hitting crazy shots all the time. I mean, the idea this hasn't happened, I almost kind of hope it continues all year just because it would be a pretty hilarious like mark on Jim Boylan's record that he had no good wins all season except one, like a couple. The Grizzlies are better than we thought when the Bulls beat them, and they had that win over the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard. But I mean, to go 0-for against the top eight in the East is just like, it's just like hilarious how like poorly it reflects on this whole team. And like, it just shows like, okay, yeah, if these guys are individually that good, like why can't they even like luck their way into a win?
Yeah, it's absolutely, it's crazy. Like the whole Zach thing, like obviously great level score. Zach Lowe wrote about his playmaking has kind of gone away. So like he's missed cast as number one option. We've talked about that. The other injury is like, I don't even know what's going on with Otto Porter Jr. Like, and his whole situation is like, he's got the player option thing. Like, I don't know what's even going on there. Like, I'm pretty sure he's just completely slow playing coming back. He's been out, what, 4 months now? Three, we're almost approaching 4 months with him. Darnell Mabry said that he'd kind of be surprised if Lowry comes back at this point. And like, if this is a thing where like the hip injury like could get worse if he keeps playing, like it wouldn't surprise me if he just sits out. So yeah, who knows if we're even going to see this evaluation time. I was thinking about this offseason about how they're probably just going to like roll it all back. They'll try out a new coach, and then because they thought this core is still pretty good, and they're going to try it out again because they didn't get to see it with all these injuries, and they'll just roll it back next year. I don't know. We'll see about that. When we talk about one of these guys, Wendell Carter Jr., we'll wrap up here with this last bit. There were some quotes out today about how he wants to play more power forward. I feel like that is kind of crazy in today's NBA. I mean, he's I guess somewhat undersized as a center. He's like 6'9", 6'10". He is pretty heavy. He's got a pretty big wingspan. He's obviously not the most athletic guy. We have seen the Bulls have some issues rebounding and doing stuff in the paint. I wouldn't really put that all on Carter. When he was healthy, he was doing pretty well as their backline guy. I know he was. They also do the blitzing defense. But Matt, what is your take on Wendell Carter wanting to play more four? He says that he's gonna maybe go to the team this offseason. That would like obviously completely throw everything off when you still have Lowry there. You have a young center in Daniel Gafford too. But like, I feel like Wendell Carter Jr. in the modern NBA is not a four. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I don't think so. And I'll kind of defer to Ricky as the scout in this case when he scouted Wendell coming out and is still very high on him, I think. And I am as well. But I think that's mostly as a center and his versatility there and his ability to, you know, move on the perimeter as a center that kind of gets lessened in effectiveness if he's power forward. I mean, hilariously, the Bulls have three roster spots and like $10 million tied up in backup center next year with this great, you know, cap machinations they've been doing on their clean books. But I mean, they managed to have like all these stiffs still on the roster. And I guess that's unfair to Daniel Gafford. He's not a stiff. But But he is a backup if Wendell Carter is the center. So, I mean, maybe part of that is a reason, well, we can get minutes for our other backup centers if Wendell Carter is playing power forward, but they already have two power forwards in Markkanen and Thaddeus Young. So I really don't know what – I mean, it's kind of interesting that Wendell's, like, taking it on himself to, like, do this kind of thing and kind of, like – it's kind of interesting that he's, like, trying to take control of his career this way to say, I'm going to talk to management. And because clearly if you look at the roster, there's no place for him at power forward. I don't think – on the court, there's really a place for him at power forward. So that's kind of interesting that that's how he, not only how he feels, but that he feels strongly enough about it where he can, possibly bring this up to management.
To me, it's more about his role and how he's been used on both ends of the court. Like, he's basically thrown some shade at the blitzing scheme defensively. I don't think that he's a natural fit for that scheme. I think he'd be better in sort of a drop back, more conservative defensive approach. So, you know, if he's not the center, then he's probably not blitzing. And then offensively, they just have totally, you know, underutilized him the entire season. Like, they haven't been able to tap into his playmaking potential as a passer. They have not let him shoot at all. You look at how many more threes Robin Lopez this year is shooting than Carter is. So they really just haven't developed him at all. And I really think that, like, Carter is a smart guy. He's an honest guy for the most part. I think he's been keeping it real with his quotes. And I feel pretty confident in my assessment that Carter knows all these people are full of shit and that they're not going to do him any favors in developing his career and helping him become the best player he can be, helping him make the most money he can make. And so when he says a thing like, you know, I want to play power forward, first you got to remember that, like, a lot of these young bigs say stuff like that. Like, Anthony Davis always insists he's a power forward instead of a center. I remember talking to Harry Giles when he was the top high school player and asking him what position he thought he was, and he was saying he was a power forward all day, not a center, when he's primarily, I believe, been used as center since he's gotten into the league. So to me, it's just like Carter knows they're full of shit and they're not helping him.
Yeah, I think it's almost ironic that the Bulls, I think, actually do a pretty good job of identifying the type of guys they want to draft and that they're hard workers and they're willing to be coached and they want to be great. But I think it kind of backfires on them once those guys wise up and say, you know, right, these guys don't know what they're doing. This isn't the place for me. I have to kind of, like, lead this team and, like, actually talk to management. I know they kind of, like, baited Zach LaVine into saying he wanted to have input on the team's direction. And I think, yeah, it just goes to the players aren't dumb. They know these guys are frauds too. I mean, they look around the league and then they talk to other players who are like, you know, what's going on with your guys in Chicago? You got your coach doing push-ups and, like, acting like a lunatic and just lying to people every game. And then the ultimate boss of the vice president of basketball operations doesn't want to do the job and doesn't want to tell anyone about the job he's doing. And the owner's son says everything is going great, and he's confused why anyone would think otherwise. So, I mean, from the top on down, the Bulls are just a bunch of guys who are overpromoted with no credentials, no credibility, and they shouldn't have these jobs anymore. I mean, maybe Paxson would be a good, like, assistant GM. Maybe Gar Foreman is a good scout. Maybe Jim Boylan is a good video coordinator, but they're not at the levels where they should be, especially for one of the top organizations in the league. So it's just, I'm just so, like, tired. I mean, you know, John Paxson's been at this about as long as I have, and I'm tired of, like following all of John Paxson's moves because I don't think he cares to do a good job. I think he just wants to stay in power. It's good being, like, a leader of the Chicago Bulls. It's a nice job to have, and it's like, I don't think he actually cares about winning games, let alone winning titles. I mean, the idea that this is, like, a championship-driven organization is a total joke, and I think everyone knows it when they talk about it. It's like these titles were so long ago. It was your dad writing Michael Jordan a check to get these titles, and John Paxson hit a shot, but he was like the, you know, he wasn't the star player on this team, and I think John Paxson sometimes thinks it was the role players that got them those titles. No, it was the stars that got them those titles, and this team needs stars, and they don't want to get them, and they don't have the means or the ambition or the smarts or any way to actually get them outside of luck. So if they don't have luck, they don't have any way to, like, target a star in a trade. I mean, just going back to last summer when, now I don't think this would have even been a good move, but the fact that they had no inkling to get in on Russell Westbrook, who was available for, like, anyone to take his contract, because they, and then John Paxson made a comment about it, but, well, we're not at that place yet. It's like, well, what place are we in? Like, what are we doing? What is the Chicago Bulls about? Is it about just trying to become the Orlando Magic and maybe get the 8 seed and, like, have our rookie head coach have good feelings about running into next year as like the lowest paid coach in the league and get this like low payroll team up to respectability and 500. I mean, is that all we care about? I mean, and the idea that we have to rebuild like it's 2003 and wait 10 years for all these guys to develop on the same timeline when all these other rebuilds have started later than the Bulls and are now further along because they have potential star players, which the Bulls don't. And I don't think the Bulls even see the value in having stars. I think they see having the baby Bulls like all run together and come out and see the guys play hard and maybe, you know, get to 50 wins and have a good time and keep a low payroll. And yeah, I mean, it's just like on and on year after year, the idea that they would potentially go into another rebuild. If it's John Paxson doing it, I'm not sure I can take it anymore. If they have a new voice saying, okay, we're going to burn this thing to the ground and build it back up and actually try to get stars in this city again, then I'm on board. But if it's John Paxson, I just don't think he has the ambition to actually get this done.
Yeah, like I spent the last week, just because I'm sick of the current Bulls, rewatching my Bulls championship DVDs and just like reminiscing on actual good times. But it also reminded me of just how long John Paxson has been in this goddamn organization. Like, because obviously he was a player, he hit big shots in 91, hit the big shot in 93, but then after that he was also coaching in like, I think in 97 or 98, like he was a coach there, and then he went to the broadcast.
That was another job he quit because it was too hard.
You're right, yeah, and then he went to the radio booth, and then he became the GM in 03, and he's been here since. Like, he's basically, John Paxson has been a part of this organization for like the last like three decades, like since I was basically born. Like, just absolutely insane how long he's been here. Crazy. Move on. Just fire him again. Like, we obviously had this whole conversation already.
It, yeah, and you hear him talk about like him and Boylan talk about what, you know, what the Chicago Bulls are about to them, and like Bulls across the chest, and like what an honor it is to be for this organization. And it's like, well, but why? What do you think? What do they think the Chicago Bulls actually are? And I think they think it's a hard nosed defensive team that it, like, does okay and, you know, gives fans like good value for the product. But it's like, no, it should be about being one of the best organizations in the league, one of the most global brands in like the entire world, and winning championships. And I don't think they feel that way.
Yeah, people across, we talk about it all the time in this pod. People across the world, they are a global brand. Michael Jordan made them a global brand. People across the world, they know the Bulls, they because of Michael Jordan, and they don't act like a big market. We've obviously had this conversation plenty of times. It's infuriating.
Yeah, fire Paxson, fire Foreman, definitely fire Jim Boylan. That's like the bare minimum. Yes, they have exactly to get rid of Boylan. And then hopefully we can go through these last 20 games without hearing too much nonsense from Boylan as he tries to cling on to like the last like grasp of his final NBA head coaching job. Because, I mean, it's like, it's so, and I know there's like some pushback to say like, well, it's not really about Boylan, it's about the guys above him. And part of that is true, but the fact that Paxson like stood behind this guy and extended him and keeps stumbling down while he's out there every night lying to people, lying to the media, and pumping himself up like cravenly trying to keep his job, it's just like gross, and I'm just sick of him.
Yeah, those quotes the other before the Thunder game legitimately made me mad. Just the goalposts moving. I think John Greenberg was like, you know, like season ticket holders should be pissed about that. I mean, just fans in general should be mad about that. Like, we saw what you said before the season started. You set these expectations. Now to say that everything's going okay, like that's it's shameful. It's just it's ridiculous. And fans shouldn't take it. Yeah, and the organization shouldn't take it. There should be accountability. And I think that is that. Matt, thank you so much for joining us here on Cash Considerations. Always fun to chat with you and shit on Jim Boylan and this organization that sucks right now. I mean, it's just shitty to be a Bulls fan. That's why, like I said, that's why I watched these damn championship DVDs from when I was 10 years old, just to get a, remember what times were like when the Bulls were fun, when that was when I was a little kid, and just when the United Center and the stadium was actually rocking and fans actually cared. Just wanted to get that, inject that into my veins instead of watching the current Bulls because they're absolutely terrible.
Yeah, happy to be on, and of course, go to bloggable.com. Yes. We're still covering this team, even though we're kind of like hate-watching at this point, but we're going to be on top of any, you know, front office rumors and basically telling people why, if it's John Paxson picking someone, it's probably no one worth having. But we're going to keep on it, and hopefully go into the offseason with some good news and maybe some lottery luck, and we're going to kind of do this thing over and over again.
Let's hope so. Yeah, bloggable.com, follow Matt at Bulls Blogger, please, and then for us, obviously, Cash Considerations, shout out to Blue Wire. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your pods. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all those places. Go check out all the other great pods across the Blue Wire Network. Please, as always, bet online. We got this new partnership with them. Please go check them out. and you get your special promotion with Blue Wire. So this has been Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. It's been Jason, Ricky, thank you again, Matt. We'll talk to you guys next week. Take it easy.